This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Marcus Paffy's Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, a possible new approach to fighting Alzheimer's and other dementia. Google releases the most powerful AI yet, and a tree thought extinct millions of years ago is making a comeback. We'll tell you how. And on this day in history, a television milestone for the Ed Sullivan Show, coming up on Cool Stuff Ride Home. Well, a recent study out of California offers up a new approach for combating the memory issues associated with Alzheimer's disease and similar dementias. More specifically, the researchers looked at reversing the memory problems using an innate protein found in the kidneys and the brain. Dr. Tara Tracy was a senior author of the study out of the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. Per Tracy, quote, "While newly approved drugs for Alzheimer's show some promise for slowing the memory-robbing disease, the current treatments fall far short of being effective at regaining memory. What's needed are more treatment options targeted to restore memory," end quote. So most of the current treatments, as she said there, focus on eliminating toxic tau proteins, but this new approach took that another step to see if there's a way to actually reverse the damage that's already been done. For context, tau proteins are predominantly found in brain cells or neurons and serve multiple functions in healthy cells. One important function is stabilization of the internal microtubules, which help transport nutrients and other important substances from one part of the nerve cell to another. But in brains affected by Alzheimer's, abnormal collections of the tau protein accumulate and form tangles within neurons, thus harming synaptic communication between nerve cells. So you'll recall I mentioned the scientists were interested in a protein that's already found in our kidneys and brain. The name of said protein is Kibra, or Kibre, an amalgam of kidney and brain. Again, the creativity here is astonishing. While this protein is found in synapses throughout the brain, allowing neurons to communicate and form or recall memories, Dr. Tracy and team realized Kibra is deficient in those with Alzheimer's and dementia. Now, per Grant Cowie, a staff scientist at the Buck Institute and co-first author of the study, quote, "We wondered how the lower levels of Kibra affected signaling at the synapse and whether understanding that mechanism better could yield some insight into how to repair the synapses damaged during the course of Alzheimer's disease. What we identified as a mechanism that could be targeted to repair synaptic function, and we are now trying to develop a therapy based on this work," end quote. To determine how Kibra was impacting synapses, the team created a shortened functional version of the Kibra protein, and in lab mice with a condition similar to human Alzheimer's disease, they found the protein could reverse memory impairment. Beyond that, researchers sought to measure the levels of Kibra in the cerebrospinal fluid of humans to understand how it changed with dementia and what, if any, correlation existed with toxic tau protein or beta amyloid. They found that higher levels of Kibra in the cerebrospinal fluid but lower levels in the brain corresponded to the severity of dementia. Said Tracy, quote, "We also found this amazing correlation between increased tau levels and increased Kibra levels in the cerebrospinal fluid. It was very surprising how strong the relationship was, which really points to the role of Kibra being affected by tau in the brain," end quote. So you might be asking yourself, what does this all mean and how might memory loss actually be reversed here? Christine Pareja Navarro, a co-first author of the study, explains, quote, "Interestingly, Kibra restored synaptic function and memory in mice despite not fixing the problem of toxic tau protein accumulation. Our work supports the possibility that Kibra could be used as a therapy to improve memory after the onset of memory loss, even though the toxic protein that caused the damage remains," end quote. So the team hopes that by exploring this phenomenon further, they might find a way to utilize Kibra as a biomarker of synaptic dysfunction and cognitive decline, something that could, of course, assist with diagnosis, treatment planning, and tracking disease progression and response to the therapy. Well, it would appear, Reggie, that more research is needed, which is often the case with some of these studies that we bring you on this show, but promising results, and certainly it sounds like a path to follow up on for scientists as we continue to look for a more efficacious or effective method to treat this just nasty disease.
No jokes for me, nothing beyond. I can't wait to see what comes of this. I mean, this is fantastic news.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. We'll keep you posted, obviously, and as the researchers follow up on this with additional studies, we'll bring them to you here on Cool Stuff.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Google has unveiled its latest AI model, Gemini, which will be one of the most significant updates for Google yet. They are rebranding their current chatbot from Bard to Gemini, along with the launch of a dedicated mobile app and a premium subscription service. Notably, Google has integrated Gemini into its Google Assistant, allowing millions of users to engage in voice conversations with this advanced AI. The vice president of Gemini Experiences and Google Assistant, Sissy Shao, said, quote, "For Google, Gemini is more than just the models. It's really a shift in how we think about the state of the art technology and the entire ecosystem that we're building on it. From products that affect billions of users to the APIs and platforms that developers and businesses use to innovate," end quote. The Gemini mobile app is now available on Android devices with integration into the Google app on iOS. Additionally, the premium AI subscription service featuring Gemini Ultra will come at $19.99 per month price tag. Now, Google doesn't want to force AI on its users, so for now, you will have to say, "Hey, Google," or use the power button for some phones to activate it. Xiao described Gemini's personality as delightful, but wouldn't give any more details on that. She did, however, say that Gemini may still refer to its old name when asked, quote, "Self-awareness is something that the models struggle with, so if you ask, 'What's your name?' it may still answer, 'I am Bard. We are working on fixing that,'" end quote.
I'm just hearing Groot in my mind.
Groot, I am Groot.
I am Bard. No, you're not. We gave you a new name.
So you're asking the AI stuff and all you're getting is, "I am Bard." You have to interpret what it's trying to say.
That's right. Good luck. Voiced by Vin Diesel.
Google insists that Gemini Ultra, the subscription-based version, is the most advanced AI on the market as it surpasses human expertise in various subjects, showcasing its prowess in language understanding and problem solving. They used a standardized test called MMLU, or Massive Multitask Language Understanding, to measure its knowledge. The test looks at problem-solving capabilities in a combination of 57 subjects like math, physics, history, law, medicine, ethics, you know, so on. With Gemini Ultra subscription service, it further expands its accessibility, offering users packages with more storage and AI capabilities. So while carrying a powerful AI in your pocket, you know, can be pretty groundbreaking, currently the primary focus is basic tasks such as writing, brainstorming, and coding. Now, Bard isn't the only product that will be rebranded as Gemini. If you use Duet AI for Gmail, Docs, Meet, and Drive, that'll soon be changed to Gemini as well. No date for that has been set yet. With Gemini writing more texts and emails now, that could cause some issues as they say they expect more AI hallucinations. So make sure you check what you are sending out before you hit that button and, you know, deliver it to everybody. As for Google Assistant, it still exists, and if you don't want Gemini, you can keep the old version, at least for now. However, it is likely that Google will eventually replace it completely. Now, if you're wondering what Apple is up to, there are rumors that with the upcoming iOS 18 update, it will include a major revamp that will add AI to Siri.
Taking this all in stride, Reg, I don't know what to make of it, and this may just be me being an old guy trying to adapt to new technology, but there's a fine line there in my mind of embracing the new technology while simultaneously not giving up your innate ability to do some of these tasks on your own. I don't want to get too lazy, but at the same point, you don't want to fall behind everyone else and what they're doing, because clearly AI can help with efficiency, among 100 other things, but efficiency in executing tasks seems like the preeminent value, at least as I see it right now.
Yeah, if I'm being honest with you, when AI was first announced as something that's possible years ago, I kind of hoped it would develop a little bit slower. I feel like this is going way too fast, and at some point it's going to get out of hand. Now, I'm not saying AI is going to take over the world, but like you, are we relying on it too much? So if something happened and it went away, would we be useless without it? I don't know. I'm worried about how quickly it's developing.
Well, you had the story just a couple of days ago about AI scientists intentionally, or data scientists intentionally programming it to be malicious is the word. Yeah, malicious is the word I'm looking for. And they couldn't stop it. And it does make you wonder, all right, if a malicious AI can replicate itself and make itself, you know, pervasive throughout the world via the internet somehow, then what are we looking at? Because our entire society is based on advanced technology, which includes numerous forms of digital communication these days. And look, I'm not going to profess to be an expert. You hear me? I probably sound like a doomsdayer every time we this subject comes up, but it does frighten me a little bit. I have to be honest.
Most people probably are going to be pretty innocent with AI, you know, using it for those simple functions. But you know, someone out there is going to try to egg it on, you know, push for it to do bad things. And as AI learns, it'll learn from that behavior. And that's what concerns me, is a few bad eggs making AI something that's not good for us in any way whatsoever. Now, I'm assuming it's going to take more work than just some prompts, you know, saying, hey, AI, do this bad thing. But it is a concern of mine. I mean, I don't want the T-1000s coming after me.
And there it is. I was trying to prevent myself from referencing Terminator 2 again, just to maintain some level of credibility. But thank you. Thank you for bringing it up, Reggie.
You're welcome.
Well, this next story comes to us from Australia and would likely make the Lorax proud, where a tree once thought to have died out with the dinosaurs was discovered again. The Woolamay pine thrived 91 million years ago when planet Earth belonged to anyone but humans, but it was of course thought the trees met the same fate as dinos, dying off with the asteroid collision that's widely theorized to have caused their extinction. But we now know better, and in fact, some people have known better for several decades. In 1994, high in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney, a cluster of 90 specimens of these trees were found in the more remote peaks of the range. Scientists kept that information close to the vest for the purposes of protecting said trees. No more have been found in the wild since that time, but significant efforts have been made to begin regrowing the tree in top secret locations not accessible to the public. Dave Crust is the Blue Mountains branch director of the National Parks and Wildlife Service. He said, quote, "It's been described as the botanical find of the century. The fact that such a small population just remained in this incredibly remote canyon in Woolamay National Park is pretty remarkable," end quote. Speaking more specifically to what's transpired since the mid-90s, a team of scientists from the National Parks and Wildlife Service of Australia has been gradually planting small clumps of the Woolamay pine in other locations, of course, in hopes of securing their future on Earth, as you may have very well surmised yourself. Per Crust, quote, "A translocation site is somewhere where we introduce a threatened species into another location in an area in order to kind of provide an insurance population. The population was at a number where any significant event impacting could have caused their extinction. So we're at a point now where we're trying to rebuild that population," end quote. Another interesting tidbit to the story has to do with the appearance of this tree. It does not resemble your traditional pine. Instead, it appears in a very distinct shade of green, perhaps best described as candy apple. Its foliage grows in a pattern similar to a fern with a very distinct bark texture that's been likened to the cereal Cocoa Puffs. Yeah. Crazy. Per an ABC of Australia report, the Woolamay pines at the translocation site are currently quite small, ranging in size from 30 centimeters to 2 meters tall. By the way, 2 meters equates to roughly 6.5 feet. Per research scientist Baron McKenzie, quote, "Woolamay pine seedlings and saplings grow less than 1 centimeter a year. They won't mature until they can reach the rainforest canopy and access the sunlight above. That's usually about 20 or 30 meters, so you do the math. That's many decades. In over 30 years of monitoring them, the Woolamay Pine Recovery Team has never seen a seedling or a juvenile tree make it to adulthood," end quote. Now, as mentioned, the trees have been planted in a number of different positions at the translocation site to see What promotes the best growth, from rainforest to eucalypt forest and on rocky ledges? Of course, they're also trying to just protect the trees. That said, it hasn't been a smooth journey these last few years. In 2019, bushfires wiped out almost all of the pines at the translocation sites, leaving only a few dozen remaining. So the NPWS team planted hundreds more in 2021. That, again, per ABC Australia. Lisa Mankey, an area manager at the Blue Mountains branch of the NPWS, said they were able to save most of the original grove where the mature trees were, but it could have been a very different outcome. Quote, "We were lucky. The fire actually came through overnight, which meant that it was a bit cooler than if it had come roaring through during the middle of the day," end quote. And just like the original grove, the whereabouts of the translocation sites are kept top secret, closed to the public by law. An unauthorized visitor could actually face a fine of up to $330,000. That's about $215 US, and up to 2 years behind bars under the Biodiversity Conservation Act. The team itself minimalizes visiting the pines, and when they do, it's under strict protocols and for essential purposes only. All staff must thoroughly clean their gear beforehand, and when walking towards and near the trees, they constantly spray their boots, clothes, and gear with a special solution of methylated spirits to reduce the risk of spreading disease. Again, all of this per ABC Australia. Quote, "One of the biggest dangers that we have is people actually come and visit these. We know people want to, but they really can't." That per NSW Environment Minister Penny Sharp. A part of the original grove that was found 30 years ago has in fact been infected with a pathogen called, I'm going to try to say this and probably not do a very good job, Phytophthora, also known as root rot. Let's go with root rot, since I'm sure I butchered the original term, which, of course, we know slowly kills the tree. The NPWS team believes it was introduced by an unauthorized visitor. Surprise, surprise. I mean, this is exactly why these rules are put in place. Again, per Baron McKenzie, quote, "People think that they can visit it safely without having an impact, and it's just not the case. Let's just go with root rot, is microscopic. You can't see it with the naked eye, and it just takes 1 gram of infected soil to be introduced into the site, and that's it. There is currently no cure," end quote. So the team holds serious concerns that the infected trees will eventually die, adding even more importance to the work that they're doing in these translocation sites. Willamette pine seedlings have been shipped across the world to botanical gardens and can actually be purchased at nurseries as part of an effort to save the species and discourage people from trying to access the grove and translocation sites. Quote, "The species was discovered in the nick of time and on the brink of extinction. We have a really rare and important opportunity here to intervene and help it persist," end quote. That again per Baron McKenzie. The first generation of scientists, as you may expect, working on this project, they're now either retiring or nearing their retirement and feel that passing their knowledge and training onto the next group of pupils has been a true privilege.
It's kind of interesting that when you start this project, it's going to take so long that you're going to retire and a new generation has to come in and keep it going. And for all I know, a new generation after that will probably have to come in
right
and keep it going. That's just kind of crazy to think about. Like, I spent my life on this. I'll never see it completed.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I agree with you. I think it will take multiple generations of scientists to see this through so that some of these trees can reach adulthood and hopefully begin to thrive again. But I mean, reading about this was just wild. You're going, man, this is a tree that we somehow knew existed, but believed that it has been gone for millions and millions of years. And somehow you end up stumbling upon a few that survived in a high mountain range, which I mean, I'm sure there are other things like this out there. I suppose we've had somewhat similar stories in the past, but just fascinating. And you look at the tree, it doesn't really resemble anything that we're accustomed to seeing nowadays. A very, very unique appearance.
Yeah, I want to call it the cereal tree based on the way they described it.
Looks like something from the mind of Dr. Seuss, quite honestly.
I speak for the trees.
That's right.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Taking a look at this day in history. Now, I know I've mentioned the Beatles several times for this day in history, but I wanted to add in another one. There are actually two events that happened on this day for the Beatles. On February 9th, 1961, they had their first gig at Liverpool's Cavern Club, which they would eventually play there nearly 300 times over the next 2 years. That's a lot of gigs. And on February 9th, 1964, the Beatles had their first appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show. Beatlemania had taken over the United States when they made their live American television debut. Their popularity already gripped the UK the previous year. When they arrived at JFK Airport, newly renamed after his assassination 11 weeks earlier, they were greeted by a roaring crowd of 4,000 fans and 200 journalists. Paul McCartney later recalled being in the car on the way to the hotel and listening to the radio as a news program narrated their car journey. That'd be kind of interesting hearing the radio explain your car moving.
Can't imagine.
When they performed on the Ed Sullivan Show, around 73 million viewers watched, which at the time was the most watched program in American television history. From there, the Beatles' domination of the music market, of course, began, and the rest is history. As for that television most watched of all time, the 1969 Apollo moon landing did break that record for the most viewers, with nearly 150 million in the U.S. Worldwide, 650 million people watched the moon landing. Number 2 through 9 on the list of most watched programs were Super Bowls. Shocker. Nixon's resignation speech was number 10 with 110 million viewers.
Yeah, pretty wild. That all adds up. And of course, you know, we could get into the history of television and the fact that you had so many options at one point in time. So naturally, more people are going to be watching the same program at some point. But yeah, I mean, I think we all know it. The Beatles were a dominant force in not just the UK, but the worldwide for a number of years. And really, in many ways, still are.
Thanks for joining us for another week of Cool Stuff Ride Home. We enjoyed having you here. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Paff. Feel free to shoot us an email at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Let us know any mistakes we have. Feel free to correct us. We're always willing to learn and hopefully pass on that knowledge to our listeners as well. We'll be back next week with another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home.